Hi, and welcome to Jolly's Fall 2018 podcast series. This is Stacia Alum, the principal editor of the Journal of Language and Literacy Education, a peer-reviewed open-access journal housed in the Department of Language and Literacy Education at the University of Georgia. Today I will be speaking with Lindsay Moses, an associate professor of literacy education at Arizona State University. Her manuscript is titled Literate Identity Development in First Grade, a cross-case analysis of students with strong and emerging decoding skills. This manuscript was co-authored by Shuwei Chow, a doctoral student in the Learning Literacies and Technologies program in Mary Lou Fulton Teachers College at Arizona State University. Thank you for joining me today, Lindsay. I look forward to hearing more about your work. Your study focuses on two young readers. Could you introduce us to Anna and Christopher in addition to their classroom community?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll maybe start with the classroom community. I have had the privilege of working with a really extraordinary first grade teacher for going on 4 years now. And she takes a really thoughtful sort of student-centered approach to thinking about literacy instruction. So when we first started working together on this sort of formative study, the teacher was setting goals like developing a love of reading, having kids see themselves as readers, understanding that reading is about meaning making, and this notion that we're all part of a literate community where we read to be social, to talk, to share, and be sort of citizens of the classroom. And that really, I think, shapes how the young children develop. So in the school that she's in, and in a lot of schools, I think, across the United States, in kindergarten and first grade, there's a really heavy emphasis on decoding skills. And sometimes those can become a bit decontextualized. So she worked really hard to push back against that. And then within that context, Anna and Christopher, who were two of our focal case studies, the two focal case studies in this study, really presented in very different ways in terms of both academic performance on the assessments that they were given, but also the way they began to negotiate themselves as part of the community. So Anna was a very, from the get-go, a strong, high-performing student who was testing significantly above grade level. So she was able to access print in terms of decoding well above what most of her peers were able to access. And that kind of initially positioned her as a star. So when we asked students in the beginning of the year, we interviewed all of the students as the year started about, you know, who's the good reader in your class, or what does a good reader look like? And most all of the students referenced her by name. Students would come to her if they didn't know words or if they were looking for help or support. And she really kind of, even from the get-go, sort of students identified her as a star reader, I guess. Christopher, on the other hand, was really challenged with decoding and accessing prints in what we think of as a conventional decoding way. And that initially caused him a lot of frustration. So during independent reading or partner reading, sometimes initially he would just shut down. He would say, I can't do it. And he felt really frustrated. In the beginning, we would see when they had partner reading, one of his partners said, Christopher's just listening because he can't read the books that are my books. And so while the students weren't trying to be unkind, there was this pretty clear positioning of Christopher as having challenges with reading. But Meredith really pushed hard, I think, in the class to find spaces where Christopher could share his really deep thinking. His listening comprehension was outstanding. His inferential thinking was outstanding. And so Meredith really tried to make sure to celebrate and put those kinds of things on display as a way for him to sort of begin to develop a sense of self as a reader and as part of this community.
Wow, that sounds like a really lovely classroom community. In your manuscript, you shared that this is part of a larger year-long formative study. How did you decide to focus on Anna and Christopher? What questions were you able to explore with them?
When we started this study, we had pretty clear formative outcomes that we were looking for related to interpretive talk, related to literature discussions. And so actually the identity analysis came at the end. Christopher and Anna were two of those students that were initially selected because of academic identifications and gender ethnic representations. And then what happened was we selected specifically these two from the larger group because as we moved toward the end of the year, one of the things I think that we were beginning to feel like we were seeing repeatedly, or noting, I guess, repeatedly in the data and the analysis was ways that students at such significantly different proficiency levels, how they were able to bring expertise within the classroom. So by the end of the year, Christopher was really sought out for knowledge about informational text, knowledge about inferential thinking, whether it was author's message or supporting evidence or different areas. So he really became like an expert in terms of kind of the critical thinking that moves beyond the literal work. And as we began to do more inferential literature discussions with the students, he really became an expert. So students wanted to partner with him. Students wanted him to be part of their group. And the same continued to be true for Anna, but she had that status from the beginning of the year. So what we wanted to do was go back and look at how students who were initially positioned so differently or were positioning themselves so differently, either according to academic score, but also how they saw themselves as a reader, how others sort of positioned them as a reader, and look at how they continued to negotiate those identity trajectories over time, because we know they never stay the same, right? But so how did Anna begin to, at the beginning of the year where kids thought decoding was what counted, how did she continue to maintain that status and reposition herself? And likewise, how was Christopher able to be persistent enough that over time, even though he came in as someone that students would say things like, oh, he can't read this book, so I'm just reading to him, to someone who was sought out for expertise. So we really selected these two for the study at the end of the study. So even though we've been collecting data on them long-term, the identity work for these two students was specifically selected to show both similarities and differences. What did this look like over the course of the year?
As you did your analysis, what findings were most surprising or interesting to you from this study?
I think probably a couple of things. I have to say, Christopher's persistence was surprising, I think, to both of us. So he was so frustrated at the beginning of the year. He just would physically like shrug his shoulders and put his head down when it was time to read. He was trying to find other things to do. And so he was positioning himself that way. And sometimes you worry, or we were worried, that this would continue, because his decoding was still below grade level at the end of the year. And so I think one of the things was really interesting was all of the ways that he found to still make himself an important part of the community and a contributor of knowledge and of thinking. And so for us, we were really interested in looking at what possibilities or opportunities were made available for him to do this. And so I think for us, what was so surprising was that a student who, I hate the term struggling reader, but who might be referred to as a struggling reader, who was often pulled out for additional services, was able to find ways. So part of that was using the classroom language, comprehension strategies, inferential thinking to contribute to conversations that he may not have been able to access just based on decoding alone. And so for us, looking at all of the different ways and tools he used to participate, I think was really exciting. But I think also one of the parts that's interesting about that is that a lot of those tools that he was able to use might not have been present in a traditional classroom, right? So in his kindergarten classroom, those tools of comprehension and meaning making and moving beyond the text to think about his inferential thinking weren't part of the work that was being done. And so for us, I think what was interesting was obviously his success and continued positive identity negotiation, but also trying to think about, okay, what were the tools that were made available in this class that so emphasized meaning making and being part of a community and talking that he maybe missed out on his first year because he couldn't demonstrate that.
At the end of your article, you argue to truly understand young students' literacy development, one must consider the classroom community of practice, which shapes and is shaped by identity constructions. Is there anything more you can tell us about that?
So I think the more time I spend in classrooms, particularly long-term commitments in classroom where you can really begin to get a sense of the community and practices of the community, the more I found that, you know, I could be in two first grade classrooms and one classroom might teach all the same comprehension strategies that the other classroom is teaching, but if the students don't have a sense of belonging, of community, of purpose, then those experiences look really different. And so, yes, the specific literacy instruction and strategies and skills that she gave kids to access text, to think deeper about text, really moved them forward. But I think Christopher would have been lost if there wouldn't have been a purpose and opportunity for him to show what he knows in ways that included, you know, sometimes he listened to tapes on text, he would read with a partner, the teacher would help him access the text, and then he was able to document his thinking. And also that there's this sense of, we don't read in isolation for a grade or to show the teacher that we know how to make an inference. We do this because we talk about text. It helps us think about text, talk about it in small groups, in whole groups, and then that creates more questions, which encourages us to read more texts, to read texts that our friends like. And so through this context of identity work, young children have to see themselves as readers and understand that the purpose of reading isn't a grade for a teacher, because some kids will stick with that for a couple of years. But eventually the goal of reading is creating this sort of literate citizen, and students have to have independent and social buy-in in order to think about that. So it's our job, I think, as teachers and researchers to provide opportunities and practices that are accessible to all of our students so that our Christophers and our Annas have ways to make space for themselves in classroom where they can develop positive identities and show what they know while also building in those areas where they need additional support. So for me, I think the skills alone or the DRE scores alone don't really give us a whole sense of who these kids are and what they know and what they need as readers and to see themselves in a positive way.
What do you think are the most important implications or takeaways for teachers and researchers from this work that you've shared with us?
I'll start with the teachers. One of the most important things we can do is think about, you know, what can we do as teachers to create a space where there are opportunities for students regardless of their language or literacy proficiency level. So while obviously we have a focus on academics, we need to think about what is the purpose of that? How can we provide opportunities for all of our learners to feel successful while also challenging themselves to move deeper? And I think part of that for teachers really has to come at the beginning of the year. So sometimes at the beginning of the year, you know, teachers say we're community building, and they might think about community building for the first couple of days or the first couple of weeks. And some of that is really more routine or and expectations for how we interact. And while those are important, I think the focus on who children are and how they see themselves and finding ways for them to sort of have a growth mindset. So knowing that they're going to encounter challenges and giving them strategies and skills to persevere through that, but also making sure that we're providing opportunities for them to collaborate, demonstrate what they know, and feel successful, it changes the entire participatory structure for young children. And I don't want to say move away from skills, because that's not what I believe, but I think in the primary grades and K-1, we need to be a lot more thoughtful about thinking about skills in context, skills with a purpose for becoming a strategic reader. And when I talk about strategic reading, I mean, strategic reading means meaning making. And the reason that we're meaning making is to learn and grow and think and talk with others. So when you can situate it in those kinds of practices, I think it provides more opportunities, but also a purpose and a reason for young readers to buy into the hard work that is learning to read. I can't emphasize enough how important it is for all of our students to see themselves as successful and as readers. And in order to do that, teachers have to think a lot about facilitating space and talk and practice within an academic context that I think has kind of historically been a bit decontextualized and skills focused. So for researchers, I think we're just always learning from kids. I think we have to continue to look closely. And while spending a full year in a classroom is a huge time commitment and may not produce publications as quickly as we'd like, it's hard to really know children and communities and families if we don't have the opportunity to spend a full cycle with them. We wouldn't have been able to do this study if I spent 8 weeks in the classroom, right? I think identity work is complicated and it's messy and it takes a lot of time. And so for us, the data analysis was We went through a lot of different rounds of data analysis and discourse analysis to think about the tools that might help us analyze student identity work, right? It's hard to make claims about six-year-olds' identity negotiations and positioning over time because oftentimes their ability to articulate that developmentally is challenging. So while we always listen to their voices and we always ask for their input about how they see themselves, we know that as researchers, we have to do better. We have to go deeper. And I'm always concerned about making claims that aren't substantiated about young children's identities because they're their identities. And so we worked really hard to think about many levels of analysis that we went through. You can see them in the charts for the analysis in the manuscript, but to think about what supporting evidence do we have for this? What identities are signaled? How are those identities either verified, taken up, appropriated? What sort of different linguistic tools can we analyze the frames and the registers to think about what we know about children? And so I just think for researchers, for myself, it's this kind of ongoing battle about how important it is to look at children's identities, but also how complex it is and how transparent we want to be about how we came to some of the assertions that we have about these young children's identity negotiations. So long-term commitments, in-depth analysis, and really trying to be thoughtful with multiple levels of triangulations for claims about children who may not yet be completely ready to talk about identity in the way we're talking about identity at the level of this kind of research.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Lindsay. I really appreciated your answers and the thoroughness and depth of your responses. Listeners, to read this manuscript, check out Jolly's Fall 2018 issue to be published later this month.